thank you for taking the time to listen to this life-changing message from the Ministry of Faith Bible Chapel. We hope this message will encourage you in all parts of your life. At the end of this message, you will hear more information on how to contact our church family, as well as directions for you to visit us for any of our worship services. Until then, join us for the service in progress.
It is impossible for me to cover every detail of what brought us to the point where the whole earth was going to be destroyed. But let me try to sum it up by saying this. First of all, in the movie, I did hear reviews that what kind of God would destroy that many people? Now, I don't know how many people you think there were at that time, but I did a little bit of research, and here's what I've come up with. First of all, there are about 7 billion people in our world today. That seems like a lot of people. But the researchers and the scholars say that during this time of the flood, there were more than 15 billion people. Now, I know that's a question in some people's mind. How could that be? Well, you have to look at several factors. First of all, people live to 900 years old. So if you live to 900 years old, you have 9 generations, and each generation is producing approximately 8 to 10 children, so you have a whole lot of people that are on the planet. Now, whether it's 15 billion people, estimates go as high as 30 billion people. Some go down as low as 5 billion people. Doesn't matter what you pick, but there are a whole lot of people. So why would God, what kind of God would destroy 15 billion people? He must be an unjust God. He must be an angry God. And that's the furthest thing from the truth. Now, today, I want to address the subject from Noah the man. I'm not going to talk about the miracle. I'm not going to talk about too many details surrounding it, but Noah the man. The man is as important, if not more important, than the whole story itself. So we're going to glean some truths from Noah the man. Next weekend, I'm going to talk about Noah the message. What is the message of Noah? Why did Jesus mention it when he talked? Why did Peter mention it in his epistle that he wrote about Noah's days? And how does that reflect on the days that we're living here together? Well, I think I can sum it up before I get into Genesis chapter 6. Is that God's desire from the very beginning was to have a people. He created man in his image and his likeness with the total will of having this personal relationship, just a very good relationship, that God would share what he was all about with man and vice versa. That would happen. But sin entered into the garden, disobedience of God's ways, a choice that was made because of free will to go their own way. God will not take your free will away from you. Every day we have a choice whether or not we want to follow him and obey him or we don't want to follow him. That is a choice that God has given us. Unfortunately, at that time and up to the days of Noah, which was about 1,700 years, 1,756 years up to the days of Noah, people chose to walk away from God. And as they chose to walk away from God, as it is true today, there are consequences of disobeying God. We don't realize that our own choices are not always the right choices. We think they're right because in our hearts we think we're right. In our minds we think we're right. But we have to come back to that. Don't we believe that the one who created us knows what is right and what is wrong? You remember what the tree was? The knowledge of the tree of good and evil. God has that knowledge, and we ought to obey him. Those choices led man into such depravity that they were destroying one another. Literally, the Bible describes that men could go to a neighbor's house, rape a person's wife. Men could go into the streets and kill someone for maybe a piece of bread. And that was the kind of things that was happening. If left to themselves, this would have happened. They would have destroyed themselves. There would have been no hope of a future which God had in mind and designed from the beginning to have a people throughout eternity. You sit here today enjoying your salvation. We're able to sing and shout and dance and jump about our Jesus and what he's done for us because of what God did in that day. Because of Noah, there was a whole generation that was a beginning. Do you realize one other thing? If you were to trace your family tree, guess where you would end up? Noah. Somewhere in your background, Noah is your ancestor. And it goes back to them because of who Noah was. So God did it out of his justice, but actually out of an ultimate goal to save mankind for eternity. Enough said about that. Let's look at Noah the man. 2 Peter chapter 2 and verse 5. And this is a new toy, by the way. And it's something that I've wanted for a long time. And the reason I did is because I found myself doing this, that when I verse, I like to go and I was turning myself away from you and reading it on the screen. This way I don't have to turn myself away, I can just read it right here. So I was pulling you into the scripture, into the point that we're making. But look at this verse, 2 Peter. It says, and he did not spare any of the people who lived in ancient times before the flood, except Noah, the one man who spoke up for God. I want you to remember that. And his family of seven. At that time, God completely destroyed the whole ungodly men, the whole world with ungodly men, with a vast flood at that time. In Hebrews chapter 11, verse 7, it was said that by faith, Noah built a large boat, a very large boat, to save his family from the flood. Because he did what? He obeyed God. That was a real key. In a time when everybody was living in disobedience, there was something in Noah. He obeyed God. He knew what God said was true and he obeyed it. Who warned him of things that had never happened before. By his faith, Noah condemned the rest of the world, and he received the righteousness that comes by faith. These are things that are said about Noah, the man. Why did God choose Noah? One in 15 billion. Think about that. I mean, the odds, it's crazy. So one person, 2 Chronicles chapter 16 and verse 9, is true from the very beginning, and it's true even to this day, that the eyes of the Lord move throughout all of the earth, searching back and forth across the earth, looking for people whose hearts are perfect toward him. Now the word perfect here, Noah was not perfect, but loyal to him, had a drawing toward him, were seeking after him. It's just like, we're not perfect, but there's a difference when you're a seeker of God, when you try to follow God to the best of your ability so that he could show his great power in helping them. God is looking for more Noahs. He's always looked for a man. He's always used a man, or he's always used a woman. He's looking for a church. He's looking for a group that our hearts are loyal to him, bent toward him. And what does he want to do? He wants to do something powerful. He wants to affect a part of your community. He wants to affect your family. He wants to use you in a powerful way. No doubt we're on a journey. We're traveling through this world, and we're on a path. And because we're on that path, we have to be careful of our surroundings. I was thinking about when I was a child and was growing up in eastern Pennsylvania. I remember always going to the woods or the area where the railroad track came through. And it came through on a regular basis, and we would play around there. We'd put pennies on the railroad track, and they'd be squashed down, and you'd end up with something that looked like a half of a dollar. It was a penny. But we walked many times along that railroad track. And when I thought back to those days, when you're walking along a railroad track, you better be looking forward to see if a train's coming. Would you agree? But you also have to look behind you and see if there's a train coming from that way. So there's really two points to what I'm saying here right now. As we travel on this path, this journey, let's keep forward to the promises. Noah looked forward. He had a promise from God. A flood's going to come. Build a boat. So he had a purpose in life as he moved forward. But look behind us. And what do we have behind us? The story of Noah. What do we have behind us? The words of Jesus. What do we have behind us? The early church beginnings. We look behind us to learn from their examples, from the warnings they give us, from the things they did wrong and the things they did right. And we look ahead of us to the future so that we're not caught off guard or by a train traveling down and catch us in one way or another. Okay, so there are four pitfalls. Four challenges, I should say, more than challenges, pitfalls that can hurt us if we're not careful. I'm going to give you the four, and then I'm going to give you the antidote, or I'm going to give you the solution to the four pitfalls that we glean from the story of Noah. First of all, we have the cultural distractions. There's no doubt in Noah's day and in our day, there are cultural distractions. They usually fall in the category of pleasure, possessions, or popularity. The second pitfall is voices of doubt. As you walk this journey, as you travel, as you set your heart into doing what is right before God, there will always be people that will try to feed you doubt. Thirdly, there is the tempting shortcuts. That on the journey, our culture is bent toward taking the easy way. Do it quicker. I need it now. Take the shortcut. We get there a little bit faster. But I don't know about you, but I learned in walking with God, you got to do it on His timing to make it work. And the fourth one is discouraging delays. There is no doubt on this journey, you're going to feel delays. Those delays could be difficulties, detours, or dead ends, and guarantee you're going to run into them. There is not a person that I know, including myself and my family, where we haven't run into difficulties or detours and even dead ends, where we've worked towards something and all of a sudden the door was slammed shut and we wonder why it was slammed shut as a result of it. Four things that we learn from Genesis chapter 6. From the lesson from Noah. So if you're looking at Genesis chapter 6, let me read just a few verses. Beginning with verse 5, let me pick it up. Then the Lord saw the wickedness of man was great in the earth, that every intent of the hearts of the thoughts of his heart was only evil continually. And the Lord was sorry that he made man on earth, and he was grieved in his heart. This wasn't a pleasant thing for God to do. In John chapter 3, it says, "For God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son, that whosoever believes in him shall not perish, but have everlasting life." The very next verse says this, "For God did not come to condemn the world, but that the world through him might be saved." That's the heart of God. So it grieved his heart. So the Lord said, "I will destroy man whom I have created from the face of the earth, both man and beast, creeping things and birds of the air, for I am sorry that I have made them." But Noah found grace in the eyes of the Lord. Look at verse 11. The earth also was corrupt before God, and the earth was filled with violence. There are four lessons that we have that will help us counter these pitfalls. Four antidotes, if you will. Number one, antidote, you can fill it in. I must dare to be different from my culture. I must dare to be different from my culture. You cannot fit in and be different at the same time. A lot of people try to. They try to fit in and be different, and it just doesn't happen. The culture is headed one way, God is headed another way. In Noah's day, human race had hit bottom. Morally bankrupt. Genesis says that God observed all the corruption in the world and he saw violence and depravity everywhere. When God saw the extent of human wickedness and that the trend and direction of men's lives were only towards evil, he was sorry he had made them. Look what it says out of the Living Bible. It broke his heart. It broke his heart. 1,656 years, and they have come to the place where the world is broken. Let me ask you a question. What is the trend today? Is it toward God or is it away from God? It's away from God. There's no doubt about it. Now, I don't say that in a discouraging way, because even though I see it moving away from God, and it just seems the harder you work to present what is the good news and share where there's hope, where there's hopelessness, or healing, where there's brokenness, you just find more hopelessness and more brokenness in the world. But here's the thing. The Bible says in the New Testament that in the last days, that's what's going to happen. Evil will abound. But guess what? Grace is going to be sufficient. There's more grace that God is pouring out. So even though the world has a trend that goes that way, I am thankful that I am living today, that as I see someone going the wrong way, I can share with them the good news of Jesus Christ. And that's what we are all about. Luke chapter 17, the Son of Man, Jesus, comes. He said it'll be like the days of Noah. That's what was the trend then, and we'll cover that next weekend. And in all of this darkness, if you can picture this depravity, this brokenness, in all of this mess, God looks for one bright spot. And guess what? He found him. Noah. Noah was different. God liked what he saw in Noah. If you're going to make a difference, you got to be different. Noah was a pleasure to the Lord, the Living Bible says. Now, as you enter into a culture that is headed one way, there are two words that save the world: but Noah. One in 15 billion, if it weren't for Noah, all the world would have been destroyed. God only knows what it would have been like. I ask myself the question, and this is a pretty heavy question. I'm sitting at my desk, and I'm making this point, and here's the question that comes to my mind. I believe it was the Holy Spirit. Would I be that one man? If 7 billion people in our world were headed in one direction, would I be the one man that would step forward and be different? That'd be hard. Would you be that one man? Would you be that one person, that one woman? Think about it. It's a serious question. If every one of your friends, if all of your relatives, if everyone was doing evil and just doing their own thing, and yet you knew they were wrong, would you be bold enough and courageous enough to be different? Noah was different. You know, I happen to think we have it easier than Noah, because Noah had nobody to turn to, but we have each other to turn to. It's called the body of Christ. It's called the church. It's called the community of believers. And that's why I am convinced that in the book of Hebrews, it says this: forsake not the assembly of ourselves together, as the manner of some is. In other words, as most people will do. But as you see the day of Christ approaching, get together more and more than you have ever gotten together. Because we're going to need the encouragement of one another. If we dare to be different, it's nice to be different with other people. It's a help. So we have that advantage today. Noah isn't worried about what other people think. Noah isn't worried about the approval of other people. Noah isn't trying to be popular. It really doesn't bother him. He's not trying to keep up with the latest trends. He is willing to be different in that culture. Genesis 6, Noah was the only truly righteous man living on the earth at that time. Again, you just can't fit in and make a difference. I can only make a difference by being different. Not different in an arrogant, self-righteous, I'm better than you attitude. Just the very fact that you are headed on a road where you're following Jesus, they'll know you're different. They will know you're different. I got a phone call yesterday. And it was one of those phone calls. I was early. It was in my study. I was going through my notes. And as it was from a friend from my hometown area that I grew up with in high school. And then later on in college, we spent a lot of time together. He ended up being a lawyer. He's almost reached retirement age now as a lawyer. And when he called me up, I didn't answer the call, but I saw his name come up. And I thought of two things. He's calling me either because he's in town and we could get together, or someone died. and you don't like the latter one. So I called him back, and here's what happened. Another friend of ours, who we hung around with in high school and then in college, and someone I lived with quite a few years in Carolina and then in California, son suddenly passed away. He's 36 years old. Another friend had called this friend and said, you know, George is really the only one that can talk to him at this time. Let's call George and get him to call Harvey. Now, I say that because none of these guys are believers yet. None of them are believers. I have told them about my testimony over and over again. They see the difference in my life. And here, they know there's something different about me. So when it comes to crisis, when it comes to something that seems hard to deal with, that's more eternal, they're going to call me. We need to be different, and not necessarily will you see the results right away, but just the fact that you're different, you're going to have an influence on our world. Difference meaning you're headed in the right direction. Great people never follow the crowd. Don't try to follow the crowd. Matthew chapter 7, 13, here's what Jesus said. Enter through the narrow gate, for wide is the gate and broad is the road that leads to destruction, and many enter through it. Jesus was a realist. He said, listen, this message, this road that I am asking you to walk on and follow me, he said, listen, not many people are going to walk on that road. It's a narrow road. And you're going to have to realize it's going to be a battle. There's going to be choices that are going to have to be made. There's another road. It's real broad. There are going to be a whole lot of people on that road. But if you're going to follow Jesus, it's a pretty narrow road. But it's the best road. It's the easiest road to get to heaven. Now, the second antidote to the pitfall here. I must listen to the voice of God, not the voices of doubt. I must listen to the voice of God and not the voices of doubt. There are plenty of voices of doubt. They come from your family. They come from friends. They come from fellow workers. They try to discourage you. They try to detour you. They try to cause you to fall. Can you imagine in Noah's days the voices of doubt that came his way? The world is going opposite, remember. They look at Noah. The guy's building a battleship in his yard. He's building the Queen Mary. Where's the homeowners association when you need them? It's kind of like, what's this guy doing? How about his own family? It says that seven members of his family were saved, but I could picture what a son and a daughter would say. Dad, you want me to do what? I got a soccer game going on over here, and you want me to go out and get pitch and wood and work on this thing? Yes, son, we need to do it because God's going to send a flood. What's a flood? It hasn't rained. What are you talking about rain? You see, I'm sure he got it from his family. I'm sure he got it from his neighborhood. I'm sure he got it from everybody in the community. Jesus mentioned several times voices of doubt that came his way. There was a man named Jairus who had a daughter who was sick. He heard that Jesus was nearby, so he went to get Jesus because he really believed if he could get Jesus to come, he would heal his daughter. So he gets there. In the meantime, Jesus gets distracted because there's a woman that pushes in and touches the hem of his garment. And you remember the incident. He ministers to her and she's healed. In the meantime, Jairus' daughter dies. His friends say, don't bother the master anymore. There's no hope. Don't bother him. But Jairus had enough faith in his heart. He pressed to Jesus. Jesus went to his house, and guess what? Raised his daughter back to life again. There will be voices of doubt. Joseph, in the Old Testament, had brothers that hated him, called him a dreamer, simply because he had a vision for what God would do someday for Israel. They hated him so much that they put him in a pit to be sold into slavery. Did you know Jesus himself had brothers and sisters? They were half-brothers and half-sisters because only one was conceived by the Holy Spirit, and that was Jesus. But Joseph and Mary had children. James was one of them. But we get the indication throughout the Scriptures that Jesus' brothers from time to time thought that he was mentally disturbed. They tried to pull him away and maybe give him time to get healed. They talked to his mom because they didn't believe at that time. But he was different. He wasn't listening to the voices of doubt. He was listening to the voice of God. Back in 1972, I had just gotten to Colorado, January of 72. I pulled into the city. I knew I was to be here because I heard the voice of God. This is where I was touched by the Lord. So I came back here from California after getting out of the Marine Corps. But I didn't know what to do. So I got a job on a construction site. And my job was simply to be a laborer. They call it gopher. You go for this, you go for that. So you do all the labor work. You get lumber, you get material, you dig holes. So I did that for a few months, and then the framing contractor that I was working for had a whole lot of work, so he took a crew and went ahead of us and did some framing, and he left the carpenter behind and myself to put the siding on the house. And I simply held the side of the siding. We were on a scaffold one day in the year of 1972, and while I was holding the one end of the siding while this other guy was nailing it, I heard a voice behind me say, "I want you to go into business for yourself." It was so realistic to me that I turned back to look on the street to see what it was. I thought someone was telling me that from the street. And yet then I recognized that God had spoken to my heart. It was the voice of God. I turned to this carpenter immediately because my head began to move like this. Well, that's right. Hey, he's paying me a certain amount. He's getting money. So why don't I just get all of it? I go into business for myself. So I said to this carpenter, "Hey," and he knew my testimony, and he knew what it's like, and I said, "God spoke to me to go into business. Would you like to go into business with me?" Immediately, this guy's in his 40s, he said, "Hey, that sounds good." He goes home and he talks to his wife. He tells his wife what I told him. The next day he comes back and he said, "Here's what my wife said. Stay away from that crazy guy." No, really, he said, "I can't do it." Well, I can understand. We got kids, you got a steady salary, and you're going to go with a guy that heard God's voice, you know? So I had to talk to my boss that day. Now, I've only been working 8 months on construction. I've never touched a hammer before in my life. So I was just learning the trade. So I go to my boss. My boss is a short guy, but he's built like a brick ship. I mean, he's hard, the weather's beaten, and he's been a framer, and his muscles are bulging out, and his neck is like this, and he's a scary guy. So I walk up to him, I said, "Boss, I believe God told me to go into business for myself." Oh, man, he opened his mouth. I cannot repeat the words that he said. It was burply, bleep, 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 this, "Who do you think you are, you arrogant young punk, and you've been touched." I just believe God told me to do it. So I did. I went out, and I went home to my brother, and I said, "Hey, Dave," he was working for Pepsi at the time, "how'd you like to go into business with me?" He said, "Sure, let's do it." I mean, he's as adventurous as I am. We went out, bought brand new tools, and went out. Well, long story short, God allowed us to build that company. And when we had to build the first part of this church complex, there's 61,000 square feet over here we built when we moved from downtown Denver. The company that I had, we built that building. And we were able to build that building, and God had blessed us so much we didn't have to charge the church for building it. Now, only God knew that was in the future. So in 1972, God speaks to me to go into business, to build a construction company, that in 1979, we end up building a church for his kingdom. It's God. Now, it has nothing to do with me. But you got to understand, when God sets you out to do something different and make a difference in the world, there are going to be voices of doubt that are going to challenge you. I could have listened to any one of those voices and many, many others that were there with it. You know what our loudest voice of doubt is, though? The one that comes from inside of you. "I can't do that. I'm not good enough. I've been told all my life that I'll never make it." So there's a voice inside of you that tells you, you don't have the wherewithal to do it. You can't listen to those voices. You have to know that he that is in you is greater than he that is in the world. You have to know that God can do above and beyond anything that you're imagining. God's power, when he chooses someone, the eyes of the Lord goes and chooses someone, he wants to show himself strong. And God's spirit will come and make up for all the weaknesses that you have in it. Short-term thinking is what our culture teaches. Hebrews 11:7 says it was by faith Noah, what? Heard God's warning about the things they could not see. Again, in Hebrews, it says it was by Noah's belief in God was in what? Direct contrast to the disbelief of the rest of the world. Listen, you following Jesus is direct contrast of the rest of the world. You're going to find it on the job. You're going to find it in school. You're going to find it in your own family that you're in contrast. But you've got to make a choice. Are you going to go God's way or the world's way? Shortcuts is what the world talks about. Number three, I want to jump some things here. Let's go to the three. I must do exactly as God tells me to do. Partial obedience is disobedience. And there are a lot of people who say they're followers of Christ today, but it's kind of like the rest of our culture and world. You pick and choose what you want to obey or not obey. So you come across as someone who's following, but you're taking shortcuts. You're not doing exactly what you ought to be doing. I must do exactly doing and not only hearing. Noah always tried to conduct his affairs according to God's will. Faith is simply obeying when you don't understand, and you do it. Tempting shortcuts. Take the easy way. Skim a little. Cut corners. I can do it faster. Shortcuts, you'll be tempted to take them ethically, morally, financially, spiritually. This week, matter of fact, it was about 3 days ago, I got a news flash. And my brother has an app where he gets news flash of what happens back east. So we vacation at the Jersey Shore. Most of you know that that's where we still vacation. On the boardwalk at the Jersey Shore, there's this famous pizza place called Mac and Manco. Mac and Manco is some of the best pizza. It's the kind of stuff you eat only on vacation. It's dipped in butter. I mean, it's like, it's just Mac and Manco. There's lines there all the time. It's very famous. They have a reputation. And here's the news flash. The owners of Mac and Manco arrested on 30 counts of fraud. Yeah. We don't know if we're going to get pizza this year. Forget about I'm going to jail. I'm not going to get my pizza. $1 million in tax fraud. They were taking a shortcut, putting dollars in their pocket. $1 million over 5 years. But you know, even if they pay the $330,000 they owe in taxes, they're still going to go to jail because they committed fraud. That's our culture. That's our world. Taking shortcuts doesn't get you there. Noah, it said, obeyed God, built a large boat to the saving of his family. He didn't take a shortcut. Can you imagine Noah? He gets up there and he's building year after year after year. God told him it was supposed to be like 450 feet long. He gets to about 350 feet. He says, hey, maybe we could just stop right here. It's supposed to be 75 feet or 45 feet high or something like that. He said, man, that's high up there. Let's not build a scaffold. Let's stop at 35 feet. I think something would have went wrong on that boat at flood time. Shortcuts never work, folks. Don't be swept in by taking the short way. Listen, if you're going to serve God, you're in it for the long haul. God does it. As a matter of fact, I find a bigger percentage of the time I pray a prayer, I'm not going to get it on my timing. It's going to be on God's timing. There are some times he answers immediately, and I thank God for that. But there are other times it takes years for him to answer. But guess what? They get answered. The fourth one, I must refuse to give up. There'll be a temptation to give up on your walk. It could be a temptation to give up. I'm tired of being good. I'm tired of just everybody else is doing. There's this pressure that comes from our world. Don't give up. Discouraging delays, difficulties, detours, dead ends. I want to tell you, I ran into dozens of them. Sometimes I think people, and I hear it in their voices, as if Cheryl and I never run into problems, or we never ran into a detour. Do you know, I've worked for years on a project or headed for something, and at the end of it, it was a dead end. And I don't even know why, but I kind of put it on a shelf because I trust God. And I put it on a shelf and say, God, I don't understand that one. So I'm just going to put it up here. And guess what? Every once in a while, God directs me back to that shelf and shows me something. And I don't think I'm going to get all the answers until I get to heaven. And guess what? It's all right. God's still God. This is only a short time that I have with him. 120 years it took Noah to build the boat. Don't give up. Look what Galatians tells us. So let's not get tired in doing what is good. At just the right time, we will reap a harvest of blessing if we don't give up. There were family members that I prayed for 20 years, and it was after 20 years that they came to know Christ. It takes a long time, but don't give up. You're going to reap a harvest if you're following God. Now, let me wrap this up. The ark is a symbol of salvation, wasn't it? That's how the eight people were saved. It is a symbol of salvation. During that time when the ark was being built, we're told that Noah went around telling people that a flood was coming. He was saying, listen, there's a flood coming. You need to change your ways. We're not following God like we know we should be following God. We're living in disobedience. The things you're doing to one another are wrong. Get your life right. Come to the ark. Believe. Be saved. Only eight people were saved. That was salvation. Today, there's another ark. It's called Jesus Christ. He's the ark of salvation. And do you know what we're doing? We're going around telling people, listen, you got to get ready. There's a flood coming. It's not a flood of water, but there's fire and destruction are coming. I'm going to talk about it next week. Don't you think there's a reason that Jesus referred to Noah? Don't you think there's a reason why Peter referred to Noah? To let us know that the same things are going to happen. What do we need? How big of a hammer do we need to hit us on the head for us to wake up and say, wow, there's truth in this. It happened before, it's going to happen again. So our Easter presentation, whatever we do, our walk of being different, our sharing with our friends, us loving them into the kingdom, speaking truth in their life, living it ourselves is a message to the world because destruction is coming. Bow your heads with me, please.
We hope that this message has spoken something personal to you. If you would like more information about our church family or service times, please call us at 303-424-2121 or visit us at our website, www.fbci.org. Faith Bible Chapel currently meets in our Family Worship Center, located on the corner of 62nd Avenue and Ward Road.